Uddesa Vibhanga Sutta, an analysis of the statement. I have heard that on one occasion, the Blessed One was staying in Savatthi in Jeta's grove, Anathapindika's monastery. There he addressed the monks. "Monks." "Yes, Lord," the monks replied. The Blessed One said, "Monks, I will teach you a statement and its analysis. Listen and pay close attention. I will speak." "As you say, Lord," the monks responded. The Blessed One said, "This, a monk should investigate in such a way that his consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused, nor internally positioned. He would, from lack of clinging sustenance, be unagitated. When his consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused, nor internally positioned, from lack of clinging sustenance, he would be unagitated. There is no seed for the condition for future birth, aging, death and stress." So there are three statements over here. And one thing is that the consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused. And the second one is no internally positions. And third one is the lack of clinging sustenance, be unagitated. So these are the three things. And Venerable Mahakachan explained that one later on. So we look at the meaning later on. That is what the Blessed One said. Having said it, the wind one well gone, got up from his seat and went into the dwelling. Then not long after the Blessed One had left, this thought occurred to the monks. This brief statement the Blessed One has made, after which he went into his dwelling without analyzing the detailed meaning. A monk should investigate in such a way that his consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused, nor internally positioned. He would, from lack of clinging sustenance, be unagitated. When his consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused, no internal positions, from lack of clinging sustenance, he would be unagitated. There is no seed for conditions for future birth, aging, death or stress. Now who might analyze the analyzed meaning, detailed meaning of this brief statement? Then the thought occurred to them, Venerable Mahakachana is praised by the teacher and esteemed by his knowledgeable companions in the holy life. He is capable of analyzing the analyzed detailed meaning of this brief statement. Suppose we were to go to him and on arrival question him about this matter. So the monks went to Venerable Mahakachana and on arrival exchanged courteous greetings with him. After an exchange of friendly greetings and courtesies, they sat on one side. As they were standing, they told him what had happened and added, "Analyze the meaning, Venerable Mahakachana." He replied, "Friends, as if a man needing heartwood, looking for heartwood, wandering in the search of heartwood, passing over the root of a trunk, root and trunk of a standing tree, possessing heartwood, were to imagine that heartwood should be looked for among its branches and leaves. So it is with you who, having bypassed the Blessed One, when you were face to face with him, the teacher, imagine that I should be asked about this matter, for knowing the Blessed One knows. Seeing he sees. He is the eye. He is knowledge. He is Dhamma. He is Brahma. He is the speaker, the proclaimer, the elucidator of meaning, the giver of the deathless, the lord of the Dhamma, the Tathagata. That was the time when you should have questioned him about this matter. However, he answered, that was how you should have remembered it." Yes, friend Achana, knowing the Blessed One knows, seeing he sees, he is the eye, he is knowledge, he is Dhamma, he is Brahma, he is the speaker, the proclaimer, the elucidator of meaning, the giver of the deathless, the lord of the Dhamma, the Tathagata. That was the time when we should have questioned him about this matter. However, he answered, that was how we should have remembered. But you have praised by the teacher, esteemed by your knowledgeable companions in the holy life. You are capable of analyzing the analyzed detailed meaning of this brief statement. Analyze the meaning of the Mahakachana. So you can see that the every arahant, when if the Buddha said something and then they go and ask the arahant, they said the same thing. Everywhere it is the same. It is that rather than looking at the heartwood from the leaves, go and ask it to them. Yeah. In that case, my friend, listen and pay close attention. I will speak. as you say, friend, the monks responded. Venerable Mahakachana said this concerning the brief statement the Blessed One made, after which he entered dwelling without analyzing the detailed meaning. A monk should investigate in such a way that his consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused, nor internally positioned. Second one, he would from lack of clinging sustenance be unagitated. When his consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused, nor internally positioned, from lack of clinging sustenance, he would be unagitated. There is no seed for the condition of future birth, aging, death or stress. I understand the detailed meaning to be this. You see, they repeat this statement many times so that people can remember as well. And you can see what these three statements, that means from three statements, Buddha said the Nibbana. How to attain the Nibbana is said in these three statements. It is that big. How is consciousness said to be scattered and diffused? There is the case where a form is seen with the eye and consciousness follows the drift of the theme of the form. So the first one is that we see some sort of a form and now consciousness follows after it. That the rupa nimittanusari is the Pali word over there. Following after the theme of the form. And the second one is tied to the attraction of the theme of the form. And again, is chained to the attraction of the theme of the form, is fettered and joined to the attraction of the theme of the form. So there are four things over here. The consciousness is said to be externally scattered and diffused. When these four things are happening, then it is externally scattered and diffused. So we see sort of a form and we go after the sign, the features of that particular form, the color, the shape and all those things. And then the consciousness is tied to the attraction of the theme of the form. So it is because of this asada or the satisfaction about this thing, it is tied to this the theme of the form, and is chained to the attraction of the theme of the form, is fettered and joined to the attraction of the theme of the form. So this how one would actually get rid of this first one is that the consciousness follows the drift of the theme of the form. Only the impermanent, thinking about the impermanent nature is the way to get rid of that one. If someone understands the impermanency, there is this the discourse chanting together, discourse in Diga Nikaya, and it says that if the signless liberation, remember we discussed signless liberation last time, the signless liberation is developed, mind will not go after the sign. Otherwise, it goes after the sign. And then the second one is tied to the attraction of the theme of the form. So there is some sort of satisfaction about that form, that thinking about it. And that is, again, the developing impermanence is the way to go. But this one is very bad thing, that if the consciousness is it's attached to this theme of the form. Aditya Pariyaya Sutta in Sanghatta Nikaya, connected discourses, as a burning discourse, Buddha said if consciousness should stand tied to gratification in the sign or the features, and if one should die on that occasion, it is possible that one will go to hell or animal realm. Those are the two possible destinations. If our consciousness tied this, the second one is the theme of the form, it is attract and sort of thing. That particular moment, if someone dies, animal realm or the hell, that's the two scenarios. Remember that the robe, the monk was clinging to a sort of a robe and that died and that instant that he went to born as some sort of a creature in that robe. And then the fettered, third one is the vinibandha. That is that is chained, is a bond, mental bondage. We have to understand that particular, that fourth statement is the Chetukila Sutta in middle and saying. I can read one para of that one. In Chetukila Sutta, Buddha said, talking about the five mental bondages, Buddha said, if these things are not rooted out, in this case, monk, a monk is not without attachment to sensual pleasures. So he has the attachment. Not without desire. So he has got the desire for these sensual pleasures. Not without affection, not without thirst, not without fever, not without craving. Monks, whatever monk is not without attachment to sense pleasures, not without craving, his mind does not incline to ardor, to continual application, to perseverance, to striving. So he can't put effort at that time. So he can't get out when this is there. This is the first mental bondage, that the vinibandha, the word is that one, that does come not to be rooted out by him whose mind does not incline to ardor, to continual application, to perseverance, to striving. So then the fourth one is the is fettered and joined to the attraction of the theme, which is the samyojana. That, the bondages, that there's a form, sound and so on. There's bondage to that one. Whatever the lust for that form is the samyojana or the attraction to the theme of the fetter for the form. So this is the meaning. If whenever our mind take hold of an external object, the form, the sound, the smell, the taste, or the tangible object, so at that time our mind is said to be scattered, diffused. It's not here, it is there with that object. Right? And similarly, this is the case where a sound is heard with the ear, an aroma is smelled with the nose, a flavor is tasted with the tongue, a tactile sensation is felt with the body, an idea is cognized with the intellect, and consciousness follows the drift of the theme of the idea, is tied to the attraction of the theme of the idea, is chained to the attraction of the theme of the idea, is fettered and joined to the attraction of the theme of the idea. Consciousness is said to be externally scattered and diffused. And how is consciousness said not to be externally scattered and diffused? There is the case where a form is seen with the eye, and consciousness does not follow the drift of the theme of the form, is not tied to, not chained to, fettered or joined to the attraction of the theme of the form. Consciousness is said not to be externally scattered and diffused. So if my mind is not going to other forms, sounds, and my mind is not holding to anything else outside the world, then my mind is said to be not externally scattered and diffused. So I am out of those worlds. Similarly for the sound, smell, taste, and all the other five objects. And how is the mind said to be internally positioned? So as soon as if it is not externally scattered, do not regard that this is not internally positioned now. There is this internally positioned problem as well. There are two problems. And how is the mind said to be internally positioned? There is the case where a monk, quite withdrawn from sensuality, withdrawn from unskilled mental qualities, enters and remains in the first jhana. Rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation, his consciousness follows the drift of the rapture and pleasure born of withdrawal, is tied to, chained, fettered and joined to the attraction of the rapture and pleasure born of withdrawal. So he entered the first jhana state, that with the initial application. So he has got the thought of renunciation and thought of non-malevolence, that the external objects, that they are not mine and so on, then so you are getting rid of that one. So my mind is not with those objects. Then it is actually coming over here, have the rapture and sort of thing, the pleasure, because you are, how you get out of the external ones by contemplating impermanence nature or the foul nature. And if you are actually thinking about the four nutriments, And the first one you can seek and get rid of by contemplating about the foul nature. This is the edible food we are talking about here, form is, right? So the our mind become tied to the form. So Buddha is actually saying, Venerable Mahakachan explaining, that you are cutting down the first path, first line, first wrong path by not scattering your mind to external object. And then there is the second path that we are now we are coming to. For edible food one, if you compare, if you remember those paths, you can see this is the second one we are talking about. So when you go into jhana concentration, then there is this rapture. We have the initial application and sustained application and the rapture and the pleasure born of this aloofness. And now his mind, his consciousness is now tied to this rapture and pleasure. So in that case, we are saying it is internally positioned. Previously externally scattered. Now I have the rapture, my mind is internally positioned. And Buddha says that is also has to be got rid of over here. So you are familiar with these terms anyway, initial application and sustained application, you know, the mind, how to arrive at dhyana things. And further, with the stilling of direct thoughts and evaluation, that the initial application and sustained application, he enters and remains in the second jhana. So you don't need the initial application and the sustained application anymore, because I have been doing this one for a long time. I know how to arrive at the jhana state. I know how to maintain it. So I don't need the initial application. I don't have to keep on applying it. And without it, I can maintain the rapture and the pleasure. Born of concentration. And so in this case also his consciousness follows the drift of the rapture and pleasure born of composer. So we are talking about the feeling here. We are after feeling, the consciousness holding the feeling. And in the nutriments you can see, depending on the contact, we get the feeling. And then, we get the feeling and then we are holding to that feeling. So eventually the consciousness we hold into the feeling born of the contact. So it's the same thing over here. So Buddha is taking the biggest one that we can actually hold, you know, the highest satisfaction among the feeling. When Buddha describing that one, Buddha said the jhana is the highest satisfaction. So now it is actually holding into the highest satisfaction. And further, with the fading of rapture, the remains equanimous, mindful, alert, and senses pleasures with body, he enters remaining the third jhana concentration, which the noble one declare equanimous and mindful. He has a pleasant abiding. His consciousness follows the drift of the equanimity and pleasure. He is tied to the chain, fettered, joined to the attraction of the equanimity and pleasure. That's why people are being born in the other worlds, you know, the Brahma worlds. That I am happy with the first jhana concentration, I am happy with the rapture, so I actually be born in that world if I keep on maintaining it. So if I don't like the way that first jhana is maintained, so I am happy with the second jhana, then I'll be born in that world. Or the third jhana world, or the fourth jhana world. So similarly, further, abandoning pressure and pain, as with earlier disappearance of elation and distress, he enters and remains in the fourth jhana, purity of equanimity of mindfulness, neither pleasure nor pain. His consciousness follows the drift of the neither pleasure nor pain. He is tied to, chained to, fettered and joined to the attraction of the neither pleasure nor pain. The mind is said to be internally positioned. So now, and how is the mind said not to be internally positioned? There is the case where a monk, quite withdrawn from sensuality, withdrawn from unskilled mental qualities, enters and remains in the first jhana, rapture, pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation. His consciousness does not follow the drift of the rapture and pleasure born of withdrawal. He is not tied to, not chained to, not fettered or joined to the attraction of the rapture and pleasure born of withdrawal. So he attained the first jhana concentration, but he is not attached to that pleasure over there, not tied to that pleasure. You know, if you keep on meditating, for example, in the Eightfold Path, then the rapture and this pleasure come to arise. But you can keep on ignoring that rapture and pleasure, although it is coming up. one can, I contemplate about the suffering part. I contemplate about the rising phenomena, contemplate about the passing away phenomena. I know that the rapture is present, but I am not paying any attention to it. I keep doing my meditation. And this is the thing that is happening in the places where there is no Buddhism, but there are these methods to arrive at the concentration. When they arrive at the concentration, rapturous, and then they think, oh, okay, this is it, and I live with it. Even the Alarka Lama, having attained the 8th jhana level, now he thought that this is it. Because the happiness, you know, going into the higher concentration, and not constructing anything further, and he thought that this is the end of the thing. Or further, with the stilling of direct thoughts and evaluation, enters in the second jhana, and then the third jhana, and the fourth jhana, and he is not holding into any of these feelings. Remember that in Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta also, Buddha said that, that this material things, element of extension, element of heat, element of motion, and element of cohesion. And then one disregard these elements. So then what is left in the space? So he regards the space is infinite and getting rid of all the other things. So you can see that the internal, externally scattering part is not there in that one as well. Because that you're looking at the this matter and his mind is not holding to that matter. So he's going into the rapture states and then becoming first jhana, second jhana and the fourth jhana level and then go to the space is infinite level. And then the consciousness is infinite. And having reached the consciousness is infinite state, then he look at that this consciousness, I can maintain this consciousness is infinite state for a long time, as far as I want. But this one is constructed. This feeling is constructed like a two wood stick when you rub it together that the heat is born and then when you separate it there's no heat. Likewise, this one is constructed. This arises depending on the contact. With the cessation of contact, feeling ceases. So that he actually gets rid of these things. So, in the same way, over here you can see that we're talking about the three kind of feelings. Three kind of feelings, that pleasurable feeling, displeasurable feeling, neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable feeling. So it is our second path in the nutriment case. And so if I am not holding to external objects, so then my mind is not scattered or diffused. If I am not holding to the internal concentration, dhyana, feeling, then my mind is not inwardly fixed. And then there's this third one. So that we're talking about the getting rid of the two. The third one is, and how is agitation caused by clinging sustenance? There is the case where an uninstructed run-of-the-mill person, that's the ordinary person, who has no regard for noble ones, is not well versed or disciplined in their dhamma, who has no regard for men of integrity, is not well versed or disciplined in their dhamma, assumes form to be self. So these are the people who has not heard dhamma, or these are the people who has not seen Aryans, Buddha or the Aryan disciple. So he regards form to be self. Or the self as possessing form. Remember we discussed this one before as well, like a tree and the shadow and the sort of examples. So we regard this body is the same as the self. Or I would say self as possessing the form. Or the form as in self or self as in form. His form changes and is unstable. If I actually hold into this very same body, this body changes. You know, the skin become wrinkled, teeth fallen, and then, hair gone and discolored and all those things. It is unstable. Because of the change and instability of form, his consciousness alters in accordance with the change in form. When the form changes, my mind changes. Because my mind hold this this is mine, this form is mine, and this form changes. So the consciousness also alters according to. With the agitation born from the alteration in accordance with the change in form and coming from the co-arising of qualities, his mind stays consumed. He's worried about this thing, you know, what is happening to my body, what is happening to my society, what is happening to my house, you know, everything. His mind becomes consumed. And because of the consumption of awareness, he feels fearful. He's afraid now, agitated, threatened, solicitous. So, again, he assumes feeling to be the self as well. Perception, volitional formation, and then the consciousness, all to be self. He assumes consciousness to be the self, or the self as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or the self as in consciousness. His consciousness changes and is unstable. Because of the change and instability of consciousness, his consciousness alters in according to the change in consciousness. When the consciousness change, you know, if I have to hold into my consciousness, the consciousness change, then I'm troubled with that one. For example, if you think about the Brahma world, where the consciousness is infinite, and if it is, you know, unstable, and if it changes, then I'm fallen from that one. And with the agitation born from the alteration in accordance to change in consciousness and coming from the co-arising of unskilled mental qualities, and his mind stays consumed. And because of the consumption of awareness, he feels fearful, threatened, and solicitous. So you can see, if you think about the Kajjani Sutta, for example, and the Buddha said that this is eaten, this form, I'm eaten by the form in the past, present and future, and similarly feelings. This friend is how agitation is caused by clinging sustenance. Now you should compare this one into the third part in the nutriment, the volition. With the volition, that we have this view that these things are mine. It's not belonging to me, but I get the perception that this is mine. And having got the perception that these sort of things are mine, whether form or the feeling or perception, whatever thing it is, and then he gets this view, he clinging to that view that this is mine. And then ditti occurs. And then remember that he is going, agati part is that he is going in the bad way through fear. That's the fear Buddha is talking about over here. Since this one is changing, I regard that this particular form as mine, for example. And doctor will say that, dear man, your leg has to be amputated because of the problem. Aren't we get afraid of that one? So that the fear occurred because of these things. So similarly, by the time of the death, or when we are sick, and all the time, when this alteration is there, when it is visible, then there is this fear. And how is non-agitation caused by lack of clinging sustenance? There is the case where an instructor disciple of the noble ones, who has regard for noble ones, is well versed and disciplined in their dhamma, who has regard for men of integrity, is well versed and disciplined in their dhamma, doesn't assume form to be the self, or the self as possessing form, or form as in the self, or the self as in form. His form changes and is unstable, but his consciousness doesn't, because of the change and instability of form, alter in according with the change in form. His mind is not consumed with any agitations born from the alteration in accordance with the change of in form, coming from the co-arising qualities, and because his awareness is not consumed, he feels neither fearful, threatened, nor non-solicitous. For example, if I don't buy any stocks in the stock market, I do not care whether the stock market goes up or down, because I am not holding, these things are mine. So stock market always change, but my consciousness does not change. You know, I remember one of my friends, even I was in Brunei, and then the next door neighbor, he is actually buying these stocks, and he's not sleeping at night time, 3 o'clock, smoking and walking here and there. Why? Because the stock market has gone down and he lost some money. So actually that person died, you know, age 45 or something like that. So it is that bad. It is that when we acquire something as this is mine, and when that thing change, our mind become agitated. But if it is not mine, I don't care whether whatever thing happening to those grasses over there. If I'm not regarding that grass as mine, whether there is a bushfire or whatever thing it is, there's no agitation in my mind. But even for the grasses, if we think, oh, this is beautiful, therefore it should stay there, and then something is happening, then naturally that problem comes to our mind. Similarly, he does not assume feeling to be self, does not assume perception to be self, he does not assume fabrications to be self, that is the volitional formation. He doesn't assume consciousness to be the self, or self as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in the self, or the self as in consciousness. His consciousness changes and is unstable, but his consciousness doesn't, because of the change and instability of consciousness, alter in accordance with the change in consciousness. His mind is not consumed with any agitation born from the alteration in accordance with the change in consciousness, or coming from the co-arising of unskilled mental qualities, and because his awareness is not consumed, he feels neither fearful, threatened, nor solicitous. He does not, basically doesn't care about any of these things. And Venerable Mahakachan says, this friend is how non-agitation caused by lack of clinging sustenance. So for this particular path, is that how one is not agitated, and you know, if my consciousness is not troubled, if I'm not assuming that these things are to be mine, and my consciousness is not getting troubled. If I'm not getting troubled, I'm not fearful, then I attain Nibbana. That's what Buddha says, right? If I'm not getting frightened about these things, if my mind is not consumed by that one, how would I not consume, how would I get attain Nibbana? And this one is explained in discourse name is Thorough Investigation. It's called Parivimamsa Sutta in Connected Discourses of the Buddha, Nidanavagga. Over here, I read only one part of it. Because if a person immersed in ignorance generate a meritorious volitional formations, that is punyabhisankara, meritorious ones, consciousness pairs on to the meritorious. So I am doing the meritorious one, then my consciousness pairs along with that one, and I do keep on doing the meritorious ones. If we generate demeritorious volitional formations, consciousness pairs on to the demeritorious. I am sort of killing, stealing, you know, that when you start killing sort of thing, then this we are going in the wrong path. Since we are going in the wrong path, we can keep any evil things in the wrong path, or we keep on doing bad things. You know, the people who are doing bad things, they keep on doing bad things. And people who are doing good things, you know, the meritorious things, they feel like going doing them. So his mind is faring onto that one. If he generates imperturbable volitional formation, consciousness pairs onto the imperturbable, that is the Arupa Dhyana, the attaining the those consciousness. So whatever thing we set up our volitional formation, sanskara, our mind pairs onto that one. And Buddha said, but when a bhikkhu has abandoned ignorance and arose to knowledge, then with the fading away of ignorance and the arising of true knowledge, he does not generate meritorious volitional formations. He is not doing any meritorious ones. Or demeritorious volitional formations. He is not doing demeritorious ones as well. Or imperturbable volitional formations. They just attain these states for this, you know, because of the practice. And there is no attachment to that states. Remember, in the second one, we were talking about that generate the dhyana concentration and inwardly fixing that I am attached to that one, bound by that one. If someone is, you know, free, they are not attaching to those things. Or imperturbable volitional formations. Since he does not generate a fashion volitional formations, generate or fashion volitional formations, he does not cling to anything in the world. Not clinging, he is not agitated. See, if someone is clinging, what we explain is that when the form alters, the feeling alters, then he becomes agitated. Now, if you are not doing that one, then he is not agitated. Not being agitated, he personally attains Nibbana. So that's the method. So that means if you end the first path in that nutriment thing, and the second path and the third path, Buddha is saying you are not no longer in the fourth, third path. If someone can do that one, because the consciousness is not now holding to anything in the world.
So that means until then, so while you are in the meditation, those things come to your mind, but you don't, as you say, get agitated by going for that or and staying in that.
You are not clinging to any of those. Yeah. So first, in the meditation time, you are trying to get out of the, my mind can externally, you know, scattering part that I can actually fix on the external objects, you know, my cooking, my whether I have switch on the heater, all those things, right? So any bodily things, so one would get rid of those things. So I'm now out of the external ones. My mind is now coming to me, right? Now when the mind comes to me, it is coming with the, let's say I can get my mind hold to myself, only if I have the jhana. Otherwise it goes out. So if I have jhana, I am not externally scattered or diffused. My mind is not externally scattered. Now I got the mind to the over here, and if I cling to my rapture, then I am inwardly fixed. I am not making any progress further. I am still holding to my feeling.
But you are in jhana.
You are in jhana. But your job is not, you need jhana. You don't need to be clinging to the jhana, not attached to that one. It is totally different to attaching to the form one. The form, things are really bad and it's holding you very thoroughly. Jhana is sort of not like that one. It's easy to get rid of, but still you can get attached to a certain degree. I mean, I can remember my own experience that first time when I get the rapture, and I wasn't actually looking at it at all, not focusing at all. I went through my meditation, keep on doing that one because I want wisdom, my mind. But after the meditation, I remember, after having my lunch or something, and then I remember I have really good one. And then you get some sort of attachment to that one. Next day you want that one. For 1 month I didn't have that rapture, didn't come.
So, whenever you are attached to meditation and rapture and all of that, that means that you are attached to existence, isn't it?
Yes. So you are actually, that Buddha says, so your mind is inwardly fixed now. You are not going to Nibbana, but you will be born in that good world. That's a different scenario.
So what Buddha says is, don't get attached to existence because that's the ultimate goal, isn't it?
Yes. Not only existence, it is simply that this particular moment, if I hold that my rapture is good, then I am holding to the future. So that's why you are talking about the existence, right? So as soon as I attach to my rapture, cling to this one, hold it thoroughly, then I am not making any progress any further. As I said that I couldn't actually even arrive at that one for 1 month. Until I forget about it, I don't want it, also sort of thing. I went on my path again. So then you can get it back. Whenever we hold it, we are there. Whether it is a feeling, the perception, volitional formation, consciousness, doesn't matter. If I hold into any of them, then I won't be going to Nibbana. It's like, like the dog, tied to the pole, going round. I was in that side before that. Now I am in somewhere else here. Right? This side changed to the other side.
So when one says going to Nibbana, that means that no more existence, isn't it?
No more existence, yes. It is the cessation of all these cravings.
All these things.
Because Nibbana is not a sort of a place.
Yes.
So whatever the craving I have for them, whether it is a matter or feeling, perception, volitional formation or consciousness, I will not have any clinging to any of these things.
Yes. So that's why Buddha said there's no more being for me, because but that doesn't mean that that's the annihilation theory.
No. It's not the annihilation theory. No. Annihilation theory is that it is like this. that let's say I'm eating hoppers, I'm taking sugar, hoppers and rice, right? And then I see the rice is sort of gross or something. I'm not going to eat rice anymore. I will live with the hoppers and sugar sort of thing. It's like that. I got rid of this one, but I still want to exist. So then I'll be born in, you know, sort of a higher world where that I don't want the form. I'm disgusted with the form. I'm happy with the feeling. So I'll be born in another world where the feeling is the foremost thing. Yeah. So over here, everything got rid of. Nothing will be left. So this particular part about the agitation, we really don't understand that much. We understand if I hold that this body as mine, right? Then if someone says that I have to amputate your leg, and then I get agitated and I get the fear because of that one, right? And because of that, I go into another world. Because of that, my fear. Because I'm holding to this thing, that I'll be born, and I'm going into that, this is the third direction, and I'll be born again. Fear means that I am actually holding something thoroughly, in my mind as mine. Look at the first part, the nutriment one. If you have the edible food, you are clinging to the edible food, and there is this, you know, the sensual desire and all those things, the body tie of covetousness, and the raga or the lust, and the lust holding to the form. And at that time, because my consciousness steadying on the form, my mind holding to the form, by that time I might actually be born because of my lust. Chande Nagati, that's I like this one, and therefore I am being born in that scenario. In the second one, second path, if you take the nutriment as the contact as the nutriment, and then I got the feeling, and then I hold the future, and having hold the future, I see some sort of a change in this, my scenario, my, you know, my house broken or something, and then I become angry. And then because of the hatred, I'll be born in that case. Don't think about the, I'll be born somewhere, okay, most probably maybe this world, because at that time I am saying, I want that, but I got this one, I don't want this one, I want that. That's what I am saying when I am angry. That is the nature. There is something that I am holding. And the third one, when you get the volition as the, mental volition as the nutriment, and I'm regarding these things as mine, for example, this body as mine, the feeling as mine, all those things as mine, then I go through the fear. And bhayanagati, that is what the word, that I will go through the, you know, be born with the fear. So it's not very, very, you know, the clear as compared to the first one. But you can see, in the first part, I had three things, that this edible food, and I have the perception that this is fair. The fair while it is foul. I got the thought that this is fair while it is foul. And then I got the view that it is fair while it is foul. So there I got three things. And the next one, I got another three. Because there is suffering, but I regard that one as pleasurable. So I got the perception, and then the thought and the view. So there are six things. And when you come to the third one, I got nine of them. Very strong now. So I'm holding to everything now. You know, it is fair, pleasurable, and mine. So I got the strong view over there. So if I do not regard this leg as mine, whether it is broken or anything happened to it, I don't care. While I'm holding to it as mine, that's where I'm getting upset. That's why the Arahants don't care about, you know, whatever thing it is happening, because they are free from this thing. And if someone says, I will come and kill you, you know that the monk we were talking about, the 7-year-old monk. Yeah. So Buddha said that if someone is not agitated, then he personally attained Nibbana. In the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta also Buddha said the same thing. That so not to agitate, then our mind should not be externally scattered or diffused, or not inwardly fixed. And we should not regard anything as mine either, the material things. So, Venerable Mahakachan said, so concerning the brief statement the Blessed One made, after which he entered his dwelling without analyzing the detailed meaning, it implies a monk should investigate in such a way that his consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused, nor internally positioned, he would from lack of clinging sustenance be unagitated. When his consciousness neither externally scattered and diffused, nor internally positioned from lack of clinging sustenance, he would be unagitated. There is no seed for the condition for future birth, aging, death or stress. This is how I understand the detailed meaning. Now, if you wish, having gone to the Blessed One, question him about this matter. However he answers is how you should remember it. Then the monks, delighting in and approving of Venerable Kachana's word, rose from their seats and went to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down to him, they sat to one side. As they were sitting there, they told him what had happened after he had gone his dwelling, and ended by saying, then Venerable Mahakachana analyzed the meaning using these words, these statements, these phrases. Mahakachana is wise monk. He is a person of great discernment. If you had asked me about this matter, I too would have answered in the same way he did. That is the meaning of this statement. That is how you should remember it. And that is what the Blessed One said, gratified the monks, delighted in Blessed One's words.
When he said the consciousness is not externally scattered and is not internally something, I didn't understand the other thing it was not.
Not internally fixed, you know, settled. Internally settled means you attained the jhana concentration, first jhana concentration. And I got the rapture. And then my mind hold into that rapture and stays so there. So I'm internally fixed. I'm not outside. I'm here. So inwardly fixed now. And having inwardly fixed, stay there. So I have to get rid of that one as well. So what Buddha said, now whatever these sensual pleasures and sensual desires, get rid of it. That this internal one is better. The feeling, you know, rapture and all those things, one should develop, it's better than you are here. So having got that one, Buddha said, no, you need to get rid of that one as well. It's like that, you know, that small children, then they play with one toy. If you want to take him out of that one, you give another toy or food or something, so then that person is coming to that, right? So having got there, now he does not remember the previous one. Like that one, now I am here, I am happy with the internal ones, which is better, more rapturous, happier, and less harmful compared to the other one. Other one, if you die, you will be born in hell, animal realm scenario. Over here, even if you attach to this one, if you die, you are born in the Brahma world. You are not going down, because it's the jhana concentration. That is the beauty of that one. And having got that one, one has to get rid of this one. And so I'm not neither external, I'm not holding to the external ones, neither I'm holding to the internal ones either. And then I'm not regarding anything over here.
Over here is the body.
Body, feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. Anything as mine. I don't have the view. Previous ones are regarding the clinging, right? Now this is, we are talking about the views that I have. I am holding that this is mine, this I am. The form and me, the self, same. So, get rid of those views as well. Then you are not agitating, you want to be born. So, you can see the Nibbana in three statements. It is that Buddha said that one and Buddha, you know, went to the dwelling. You can see the wisdom of the Buddha, how wise to say in three statements and you know, done. And how long he has been, he had that aspiration to become the Buddha, you know, that 400,000 whatever, you know, the eons and sort of thing. And having attained that one, and he can make it in three statements and finish it.